Chapter 5. Seek Jehovah through worship He approves. Paragraph 1. Question. What blessings are you enjoying among God's people? How privileged you are to know the God who fulfills prophecies. You are in a position to enjoy the condition about which the prophet Hosea wrote, "I will engage you to me in faithfulness, and you will certainly know Jehovah." Hosea was depicting a secure, paradise-like condition that God's people would enjoy on returning from exile in Babylon. Similarly, God's people in modern times enjoy spiritual prosperity and security. Their situation is like a paradise. Hosea 2:18-20. Now you have come to bear God's name as one of His dedicated servants, one of Jehovah's Witnesses, and want to continue doing so. Paragraphs 2 and 3, Question A. Why did Jehovah come to hate His ancient people's way of worship? Question B. Why should we consider the messages that the prophets delivered? Ancient Israel was a nation dedicated to Jehovah, who gave them a set of precepts that no other nation had received. Yet, by the end of the 9th century BCE, the Israelites' situation had changed so much that God had the prophet Amos tell them, I have rejected your festivals. If you people offer up to me whole burnt offerings, even in your gift offerings I shall find no pleasure. Amos 5:21-22. Whereas God is not saying such a thing to His worldwide congregation today, can you imagine how you would have felt upon hearing such an evaluation of your worship? Is there a lesson here for each one of us? Back in those days, God's people claimed to be worshiping Jehovah in the way that He approved. However, many of them were serving pagan gods, such as the Canaanite Baal and the calf images, or were offering sacrifices on the high places. They were bowing down to the army of the heavens while still making oaths to Jehovah. Hence, the true God sent prophets to urge the people to return to Him in pure worship. It is clear, then, that even for dedicated servants of God, there might be areas needing attention, actions or attitudes that should be examined to be sure that these reflect worship that Jehovah approves. Knowledge of God. Paragraph 4. Question. What conditions prevailed during the reign of King Jeroboam II? Think of the period when the earliest of the 12 prophets spoke for God. The day of Jehovah was being foretold to strike the 10-tribe kingdom of Israel. On the surface, however, an air of prosperity existed. Just as Jonah had prophesied, King Jeroboam II restored the boundary of Israel from the north toward Damascus to the Dead Sea. Though Jeroboam did what was bad, Jehovah was long-suffering, not wanting to wipe out Israel from under the heavens. God allowed time for the Israelites to repent, to search for Jehovah and keep living. Amos 5:6. Paragraph 5. Question. The Israelites' lack of what led to rejection by Jehovah? The prosperous Israelites could have used the time to return to Jehovah by getting to know Him better and pursuing what He approved. Instead, they were self-assured, feeling that the calamity would not come near or reach as far as them. You might say they forgot Jehovah in that they became satisfied and their heart began to be exalted. Hosea 13:6. We should not feel that this is just ancient history that does not touch us. Note the reason why Jehovah had a legal case against the Israelites. Because the knowledge is what you yourself have rejected, I shall also reject you from serving as a priest to me. They were dedicated to Jehovah and surrounded by dedicated family members. Yet, individually, they lacked true knowledge of God. Hosea 4:1-6. Paragraph 6. Question. In what sense were the Israelites deficient in the knowledge of God? It was not as if they had never heard the words of God, which Israelite parents were to consider with their children. Most had likely heard some Bible accounts from their parents, in conversation around them, or at public assemblies. For instance, they had heard what happened when Aaron made a golden calf while Moses was on Mount Sinai to receive the Ten Commandments. Hence, the Israelites in the prophet's day had some knowledge of the law and had heard historical accounts. Nevertheless, their knowledge was dead in that they did not let it move them to worship God in the way that He wanted. Paragraph 7, Question A. How did the Israelites become disobedient so easily? Question B. How can a Christian begin to forget his Maker? You might wonder, how could the Israelites be so easily lured into disobedience? Hosea described the process. Israel began forgetting his Maker. Hosea 8:14. The form of the original Hebrew verb is well rendered, began forgetting. The Israelites were not suddenly suffering from amnesia about Jehovah. Rather, over time, they lost sight of the importance of worshiping Him in the way that He approved. Do you think that a Christian could fall into such a trap? Take, for example, a man who is serious about providing for his family. To do so, he would appropriately view his secular work as important. Perhaps something develops, and he feels that he must miss some Christian meetings in order to work. In time, missing meetings becomes easier, and he misses more frequently. Little by little, his bond with God weakens. He has begun to forget his Maker. A similar thing may happen to a Christian whose parents or other relatives are unbelievers. He faces issues. How much time will he reserve for them, and when? What about deciding how much time and attention to use for trips, hobbies, or entertainment? Paragraph 8, Question. In Amos' day, what did it mean to have cleanness of teeth? We have studied God's Word and put our knowledge to work. Still, each of us might consider a phrase used in the book of Amos, cleanness of teeth. Through Amos, God warned His people, "I also, for my part, gave you people cleanness of teeth in all your cities, and want of bread in all your places." Amos 4:6. That cleanness was not from brushing. It was from having nothing to eat, suffering famine. Moreover, it was a warning of a famine not for bread and a thirst not for water, but for hearing the words of Jehovah. Amos 8:11. Paragraphs 9 and 10, Question A. How might a Christian end up being spiritually famished? Question B. Why do we need to be alert to the dangers of spiritual starvation? Spiritually, what Amos described finds a fulfillment in the sad condition of Christendom. In contrast, the floodgates of the heavens are open for God's people worldwide. They are blessed with spiritual provisions aplenty. Malachi 3:10. A Christian can ask, though, to what extent do I personally enjoy that spiritual food? Interestingly, some researchers have found that laboratory animals that had a damaged hunger center of the brain lost their appetite to the point that they might starve to death amid ample food. Could an individual Christian's spiritual hunger center be affected to the point that he begins to starve, even though he is surrounded by ample spiritual food? With your own situation in mind, consider this. Jehovah provided abundant spiritual food for the Israelites. They had the law, which could strengthen their relationship with Him. They had a program of education to inculcate godly knowledge in their offspring. And they had prophets to help them understand God's will. Nevertheless, they began forgetting Jehovah. The Bible says that in the days of Hosea, they became satisfied materially and their heart began to be exalted. Hosea 13:6. If we do not want our material situation to overshadow our bond with God, we need to be conscious of that danger daily. By way of review, in line with the 12 prophets' message, What did God's people need to do? Zephaniah 2:3. How did God's ancient people forget him? Hosea 8:14. Why do Christians need to be alert even while living amid spiritual plenty? Amos 4:6 and 8:11. Take note of the weightier matters. Paragraphs 11 and 12. Question A. During the rule of King Uzziah, why did the prophets have to encourage the people to come back to Jehovah? Question B. What need did Joel highlight? While Jeroboam II reigned in Israel, Uzziah, also called Azariah, ruled in Judah. He extended his territory and expanded Jerusalem. Uzziah displayed strength to an extraordinary degree because the true God continued to help him. He kept doing what was right in Jehovah's eyes and tended to search for God. Many people in Judah, however, continued to make sacrificial smoke on the high places. 2 Chronicles 26:4-9. You can discern from this that although people in Judah and Israel bore God's name, often their worship included things that he did not approve. The prophets tried to help them distinguish true worship from false. Come back to me with all your hearts, and with fasting, and with weeping, and with wailing, God pleaded through Joel. Joel 2:12. Note, God wanted his people to come to him with all their hearts. Yes, the problem involved their heart. In a sense, they were going through the motions of worshiping Jehovah, yet their hearts were not fully with him. Time and again, he emphasized through the prophets the importance of loving kindness, justice, and meekness, all of which are qualities of the heart. Paragraph 13, question. What did the Jews who returned from exile in Babylon need to consider? Next, consider what took place after the Jews returned to their homeland. Though true worship in harmony with the law was restored, all was not right. The Jews fasted on days that were anniversaries of events linked to Jerusalem's destruction. Did you really fast to me, even me? Jehovah asked. The desolation of that city had occurred because of divine justice, which was not something to bemoan. Instead of looking back at the past and fasting mournfully, those Jews should have been exulting, rejoicing in festal seasons because of the blessings of true worship. Zechariah 7, 3-7. And they needed to give attention to other matters. What, for example? With true justice do your judging, and carry on with one another loving kindness and mercies, and scheme out nothing bad against one another in your hearts. Zechariah 7, 9 and 10. We can all benefit from what those prophets taught God's people about wholehearted worship of God. Paragraph 14, question A. The returned exiles needed to include what in their worship? Question B. How did the prophets emphasize the weightier aspects of worship? What does wholehearted worship encompass? Well, what was required of God's people both before and after the exile? You know that God's standards on moral issues had to be upheld. There were also specific actions or activities called for in the law, including gathering to hear and learn God's will. In addition, though, God had his prophets stress the cultivating and displaying of loving kindness, justice, meekness, mercy, and modesty. Notice how Jehovah emphasized these. In loving kindness I have taken delight, and not in sacrifice, and in the knowledge of God rather than in whole burnt offerings. Sow seed for yourselves in righteousness, reap in accord with loving kindness. Hosea 6:6 and 10:12. Micah declared, "What is Jehovah asking back from you but to exercise justice and to love kindness and to be modest in walking with your God?" Micah 6:6-8. And the prophet Zephaniah urged God's people, "Seek Jehovah, all you meek ones of the earth. Seek righteousness. Seek meekness." Zephaniah 2:3. Those attitudes are essential to worship that God approves. Paragraph 15, question. In line with what the prophets admonished, what do Christians need to do in their worship? What part do those attitudes play in our worship? You know that preaching the good news of the kingdom is vital. But you might ask yourself, am I inclined to view preaching in my area as a task, a burden? Or do I view it as an opportunity to help individuals who need to hear the Bible's life-saving message? Do I show them mercy? Yes, mercy and loving kindness should motivate us to warn others of the day of Jehovah. Justice and righteousness also come into play as we try to reach all sorts of people with that message. Paragraphs 16 and 17, question. Why are meekness and modesty vital in your worship? As another example, consider our obligation to attend Christian meetings, which you know are important. Have you thought of how that involves meekness and modesty? Meek ones are humble enough to accept instruction and then to apply what they learn, thus practicing Jehovah's judicial decision. One who is modest, recognizing his limitations, will appreciate his need for the encouragement and the knowledge that are available through the meetings. You can see from these examples how we can benefit from what the prophets taught. Yet, what if you sense the need to make adjustments in one or more of the areas mentioned above? Or what if you have made serious mistakes, memories of which bother you at times? The 12 prophets offer you comfort and help. Return to Jehovah. Paragraph 18, question A. For whom do the 12 prophets have an especially comforting message? Question B. How do you feel about Jehovah, who pleads with people to return to him? As we have seen, the prophets we are considering did much more than denounce and condemn. They depicted Jehovah as urging the people to come back to him. Reflect on the feeling behind Hosea's urgings. Come, you people, and do let us return to Jehovah, for he himself has torn in pieces, but he will heal us. He kept striking, but he will bind us up, and we will know, we will pursue to know Jehovah. Hosea 6:1-3. Granted, in his justice, Jehovah God executed judgment against Israel and then Judah. Still, his people should have viewed those blows as steps to restore them to spiritual health. If Jehovah's wayward people would return, he would heal them and bind them up. Picture in your mind a man kneeling to bind up the injury of his fellow. Now, shift that image to Jehovah. What a merciful God Jehovah is, one who binds up those willing to return to him. Does that not move us to want to return to him if we sin against him? Paragraph 19, question. What is involved in knowing Jehovah? What does returning to God involve? Hosea reminds us of the need not just to know God, but to pursue to know Jehovah. A modern reference work says concerning Hosea 6:3, there is a marked difference between knowing about God and knowing God. It is comparable to the difference between reading about love and falling in love. We need more than superficial knowledge about Jehovah. He must become real to us, our trusted friend whom we can approach freely. Having such a relationship, you can sense how he feels when you act in a certain way. And that is a great help in pursuing worship that he approves. Paragraphs 20 and 21, question. How did King Josiah make the knowledge of God his own? King Josiah was a fine example in pursuing true worship. Consider further his experience. By the time that Josiah became king, the nation had been ruined by the idolatry, violence, and deception that had abounded during the reigns of Manasseh and Amon. Zephaniah's admonition to seek Jehovah must have had a positive effect on Josiah, for he started to search for the God of David. Josiah embarked on a campaign to rid Judah of idolatry, extending that effort even to what had once been territory of the northern kingdom. 2 Chronicles 34, 3-7. After this cleansing, Josiah continued to seek Jehovah. He ordered temple repairs. During that work, the book of Jehovah's law by the hand of Moses was found, evidently the original manuscript of the law. How did Josiah react when that book was read? As soon as the king heard the words of the law, he immediately ripped his garments apart. He also ripped apart his heart and promptly applied what was read. He did not try to justify himself, saying that he had already done so much. Do you recall the result of his reform? All his days, the sons of Israel did not turn aside from following Jehovah, the God of their forefathers. 2 Chronicles 34, 8, 14, 19, 21, and 30-33. Paragraph 22, question, how can we benefit from Josiah's example? How would I have reacted, you might ask? Would you, like Josiah, have listened to the words of the prophets and made the needed changes in your actions or thinking? Although we do not live in the days of Zephaniah and Josiah, we can see the need to respond to God's messages and counsel today. So if a Christian feels in his heart the need to adjust his way of life or worship, a consideration of the 12 prophets can serve as a personal wake-up call. Paragraph 23, question. If you feel that you need to improve in some area, what can you do? At times, you may feel as Jonah did when he was in the belly of the big fish. I have been driven away from in front of your eyes. How shall I gaze again upon your holy temple? Jonah 2:4. Yet, how reassuring the words of Jehovah can be to us, imperfect humans prone to make mistakes. Return to me, and I will return to you. Malachi 3:7. If you see the need to strengthen your relationship with Jehovah, the elders in your congregation will be pleased to help you. As with driving a car, you first have to begin in low gear, so to speak. Once you are moving, progress will become easier. You can be sure that Jehovah will welcome and assist you, for he is gracious and merciful, slow to anger, and abundant in loving kindness. Joel 2:12-14. Certainly, the messages from the prophets are encouraging to all who are pursuing worship that God approves. How do you feel? What is involved in wholehearted worship that Jehovah approves? Hosea 6:6 and Micah 6:8. If you ever feel somewhat alienated from Jehovah, how can you return to him? Hosea 6:1 3. How can you imitate King Josiah in seeking Jehovah? 2 Chronicles 34:19-21. And Joel 2:13.